Whatever happened to psychoanalysis? Once it was the most influential and fashionable science of the mind. Today, it's more like a cartoon shtick. The bored doctor sitting behind a patient lying on a couch. And the man who invented psychoanalysis, Sigmund Freud, has been so devalued, he seems like a sex-obsessed old man. But maybe we've gotten Freud all wrong. Adam Phillips is one of the leading defenders of psychoanalysis, and he writes brilliantly about it in books like On Tickling, Kissing, and Being Bored, and Missing Out, in Praise of the Unlived Life. He's just come out with a biography of the young Freud, which got Steve Paulson curious.
Freud is, he's not the most popular guy these days anymore. He's had shinier moments in our culture, but I think one of the, you know, the recurring criticism is he's just too sex-obsessed. He reduces everything to sex. Do you agree with that?
Well, I think in many ways he dignifies everything by talking about sex. I think the point is that Freud redescribed sex to include many, many more things than it had previously included. And I think what Freud is really saying is something like, we are bodily creatures who begin our lives by falling in love with a beautiful body, which is our mother's, if you see what I mean, so that we're naturally, in that sense, hedonistic. We survive through our pleasurable experience of other bodies. I don't think Freud puts sex exactly in the center of the picture. He puts the erotic, and that means an erotic apprehension of reality. And what he means by that is, what makes staying alive alluring?
Parse that out for me a little bit. How is the erotic different from sex?
Well, the erotic is different because I think it's not a basic physical function to do with reproduction. It's much more about a way of seeing the world, and seeing the world in terms of what gives pleasure and what gives fear and suffering. So when Freud's talking about the unconscious, he's very often talking, I think, about what passes between people without them realizing. Freud talks about dream work, and dream work is something very, very interesting, which is this, that you and I may say interesting, meaningful things to each other here and now, but we might both go off, and tonight I might dream about your glasses, say. If I go to my analyst and we analyze this, it'll be amazing how much it can open up into both my past and the world of my present desires. In other words, Freud is saying it's as though there is an artist inside us who is perceiving things in spite of us. So the things we're consciously struck by are as nothing compared to the things we're unconsciously struck by.
It strikes me that we as a culture still really haven't come to terms with the power of the unconscious. If anything, we're kind of more in the sway of reason, more than ever.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, you know, everything to do with statistics, consumer satisfaction, the belief in science and neuroscience in particular. These are all old-style materialist causal accounts of who people really are. As though if one day somebody can actually explain how a brain works, we'll know everything. Well, knowing how a brain works is not going to help somebody whose child has just died. In other words, there's really a mismatch between the knowledge that we seem to be seeking as a culture and the knowledge we need in order to survive and live and to some extent flourish.
So there's sort of a fundamentalism of neuroscience, the idea that if you could just understand everything about the brain, that would explain human nature?
Well, it's as though reality can make decisions for us, that if we can get the truth about the real world, we'll be relieved of choice. It's as though nature will begin to speak on her own behalf, whereas actually science can't make decisions for us because, apart from anything else, we have to choose to value scientists.
It almost sounds like you're saying that we still haven't come to grips with how radical Freud was.
Oh, no. I really think, even though I know this sounds daft, that psychoanalysis has barely begun,
really?
Actually. Oh, yeah.
I thought it had its heyday
ago. No, it did. It had a honeymoon period, and then it dawned on everybody this wasn't going to work. I mean, there's no way psychoanalysis is going to work in a culture that's committed to religion, science, and consumer confidence because it doesn't meet any of those criteria. That's the great thing about it. So it's intrinsically countercultural. It actually is against the grain of all the things were being sold, many of the things were being sold. So that actually I think it was inevitable that psychoanalysis had died a death, and it's a great thing that it has in many ways. Because what this means now is there's no cultural prestige in psychoanalysis. No one will go into it for glamour or money. So people only go into it if they have a passion for it. And that will make it work again, because that's what it needed. It needs to lose its cultural charge and become really something that was obviously disproven. And Freud's obviously a charlatan, and so we can just forget about it. And then only the people who are interested, it's like poetry, only the people who are interested in it will do it. And no one will go into it as a good career move.
So if psychoanalysis has been marginalized, you know, no one takes it seriously anymore, what are the insights that can emerge from it then?
Well, it's not the insights. It's the experience.
Oh, it's doing it.
It's doing it. Basically, if somebody is either curious or desperate, they should go into psychoanalysis or read some and see if it works for them. You know, the idea that's going to compete with knitting, aromatherapy, stamp collecting, etc., is absurd. Psychoanalysis is for the people who find it amusing, interesting, enlightening, comforting, reassuring, stimulating. I don't remotely want to say it works everywhere because it really doesn't. But for the people for whom it works, it really does work. And by that, I don't mean it cures them because, you know, we're on Earth. There's no cure for that. But it can significantly improve the quality of people's lives by their own criteria.
Now, one thing you said about Freud is that he was radical in various ways. I mean, because he was questioning religion, he was questioning science, and he also said consumer culture. How so, consumer culture?
Well, I think Freud, I've recently written a book called Missing Out, which is a book about frustration. Freud has very, very interesting things to say about frustration, because although he doesn't say this, the implication of his work is that capitalism is really for children. In other words, it exploits the fact that children, of course, like adults, don't know what they want. Freud's frustration story is very interesting. Freud says, when we are frustrated, we fantasize what we want. But, of course, you notice if you fantasize a meal, it doesn't nourish you. So at a certain point, you have to engage with reality. You have to get the meal you want. What Freud says is we are actually very frightened of being frustrated. So whenever we're frustrated, we're prone, we're tempted to fill the gap very, very quickly. So the moment I feel a bit of unease, I buy something. I have a bath. I eat chocolate. I do whatever I do. What Freud is saying is we need to be able to bear with our frustration to be able to discover what it is we actually do want. Freud says a very interesting thing in A Letter to Fleas. He says, the reason that no adult is actually satisfied with money is because no child ever was. Children don't want money. And I think that's a very profound point, because children want affection, emotional contact, reliability, adventure, etc. And then they grow up into this world of capitalist exploitation, in which they discover there are a million things to want. In fact, we're living in a supermarket. It's great. But actually, it's terrible because it depends upon non-satisfaction. It's not that there is satisfaction, but there are degrees of satisfaction. And Freud is saying, and again, psychoanalysis might be one of the places one might do this, if one can learn to bear one's frustration, one will not be willing to be fobbed off by substitute gratifications. And consumer capitalism is a supermarket of substitute gratifications.
I'm trying to wrap my head around this idea of learning to bear frustration.
In a way, it's very simple, because we've all had to do it every so often, which is, it means that when you begin to feel that there's something lacking or missing, or you're feeling some sort of hunger, you don't jump to conclusions about what it is that you were hungry for, because that's what the culture does. It jumps to conclusions for you. Actually, it's extremely difficult to find out what it is one wants. So I might feel very, 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 very hungry at a certain point of the day, but actually I may want a conversation with a certain person. But it might be very difficult in a certain culture for me to get to know that.
So there might be all kinds of things that you want, but you don't actually recognize.
Exactly. You are unconscious of them. So Freud is saying it's not a counsel of asceticism. It's a counsel of waiting. That if you can bear to wait, and if you can have certain kinds of conversation, you're more likely to discover more satisfying things for yourself. I think that's true.
You have said it's a mistake to regard Freud as a scientist of human nature. Instead, we should approach him as a literary figure.
I'm interested in him as a writer. I don't want to say he isn't a scientist, because obviously he wanted to be a scientist and believed he was one. But I've always read him as a writer, because there are so many other writers, it seems to me, that he's joining in a conversation with, a cultural conversation that begins in around the 1880s, let's say. And he's talking about the things that, you know, D.H. Lawrence is talking about. He's writing about the things that T.S. Eliot's writing about. He's writing about the things that Thomas Mann is talking about. In other words, that's the context in which, for me, he becomes interesting.
So are you saying that we should read Freud the same way we would read, I don't know, Kafka or,
yeah,
or Dostoevsky?
James. Yes, absolutely. It's not good to read Freud in order to be able to repeat in your own mind and to other people what his ideas are. It's much better to read Freud as an evocative writer. So that, in a sense, in reading Freud, like reading Henry James, or lots of people, your own thoughts are evoked. Because one of the most interesting things about psychoanalysis, I think, is that Freud is saying that knowledge, repeatable knowledge, is defensive. That we learn things in order to protect ourselves from the unpredictability of our own minds. So if you come out from a Freud essay knowing what he thought, there's a sense in which, in Freud's terms, you haven't read it. You haven't allowed it to work on you.
You're saying that that the unconscious is working on you as you read Freud.
Exactly.
It's not all explicitly there.
Yes. Freud is saying something absurd like, read with your unconscious. And everybody thinks, how do you do that? Well, in a way, you can't help but do that. But I think more interesting in psychoanalysis is not the working something out, but the gradual sense of actually not knowing yourself. We, by nature, have a very limited sense of who we are and what we want and what we're doing.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
This is fascinating.
Psychoanalyst and writer Adam Phillips talking with Steve Paulson. Phillips is the general editor of Penguin's New Translations of Freud, and he's the author of the biography Becoming Freud.